All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. Everybody put your VHS on record so you can pay attention to what's going on during the football games. You also have to get your teak or tiak, however you pronounced it, when you were in Vietnam, out and put in the two big giant reels and hit record, because we're going to be playing a lot of music from the Vietnam era. And I want to say to all of our veteran brothers and sisters, thank you for your service and welcome home. From all of us here at Veterans Radio, we thank you. And so this program is dedicated to you. We are going to be playing music from the Vietnam era. The name of the program actually is We Gotta Get Out of This Place. Nobody really remembers that song too much, right? Yeah, the soundtrack of the Vietnam War. This is a book that has been written by our guest today. Well, there was supposed to be two of them, and maybe we'll get the second one in. But Doug Bradley is going to be on, and Craig Werner put together the book We Gotta Get Out of This Place. And it's the soundtrack of the Vietnam War. And it talks all about the different music that was being played from 1964 up until 1973. And you're going to be amazed by the diversity, and I think the changes in style and the changes in the environment in Vietnam. I was shocked. Actually, I was shocked when I was reading the book. I guess I was very naive. I was unaware of a lot of things that seemed to be going on while I was in Vietnam in 1969. But then again, I guess as a helicopter pilot, I got to go back to the barracks, and you know, I didn't have to do guard duty and all the other things that many, many people had to do. So I think that you're going to find it a very interesting program. If you'd like to get in on the action, and maybe you have a favorite tune that you'd like us to talk about, or maybe we can play, we've got CDs, vinyl, everything else laying out all over the place here, so maybe we can help you out with that. You can give us a call here on Veterans Radio at 734-822-1600. 734-822-1600, or you can call us toll-free at 844-838-1600. That's 844-VET, V-E-T, 1600. We're going to take a real quick break, and then we'll be right back with Doug Bradley, one of the authors of We Gotta Get Out of This Place. You're listening to Veterans Radio. And that is Detroit City, and that was by Bobby Bear, and that was recorded in 1963, just before the beginning of the Vietnam War. And joining me on the line right now is Doug Bradley, one of the authors of We've Got to Get Out of This Place. So, Doug, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Dale. Honored to be with you and with our brothers and sisters who hopefully will jump in and participate in the conversation. And mine was at Nakai, a.k.a. IDEC. I've got it lined up. I'm ready to go.
Okay. You got that on extended play?
Uh-huh.
It's on extended play, right?
Yes, of course.
You can record. I forget. Those are like 8-inch reels of tape or something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was just amazing.
So tell me a little bit about how you got involved in putting this book together. I found it was a fascinating read for me.
Well, I'm glad you liked it. We talked to a number of warrant officers and some of your fellow pilots. So we tried to get around as many people as we could. And the reality is, Dale, that one of the sad, perhaps the saddest legacies of the Vietnam War was the lack of welcome home and reception and sort of attention that Vietnam vets received. For a variety of reasons, which I don't think we need to belabor and go into. Some places we're still fighting that war. Mm-hmm. And what we found, because I'm a Vietnam vet, I was in Long Binh in 70 and 71, came back, did a lot of work with veterans, set up a storefront service center in Madison that I think helped become one of the examples and models for the vet centers that exist now. And you know, I stayed around with them. And we just found one time, Craig and I were both together, the professor at the UW. We were talking about music because he teaches a lot of classes about music. And he had a segment of the course devoted to the war. Okay. And asked me what I thought about the tunes that he had for that part of the course. And I said, well, you know, my soundtrack's a little different. Here's when I was there. Here are the songs that I would include. Next thing we knew, this was a little, you know, holiday gathering at a vet center. We had six or seven vets around, standing around us saying, what about this song? Or, no, I remember this. And there was a band that covered that. And we sort of looked at each other and said, you know what? There's something going on here. And
yes,
the more we talked to those guys, and then the more that circle expanded and we talked to people around the country, we realized so many men and women still had not been able to talk about their experience, had not been, you know, listened to or encouraged to talk, but they could talk about a song. And in the course of talking about a song, whether it was Detroit City or Jet Plane or Fortunate Son or Dock of the Bay or Boots Were Made for Walking, they started then to talk about their experience. And we sort of came away with this notion that music, our music, the best music, I think, it was frankly, I mean, it was the best of country, it was the best of soul, it was the best of rock, that helps to sustain us. It connected us as a generation. It connected us to one another. You could form communities around it. It was a way you could sort of survive and keep your act together. And then for some, it was a way to heal when they got back home. So it was a joy to do this. We are just so glad that the 200-plus people that we talked to over the course of 10 years invited us into their lives and shared their stories.
Well, that's for sure. And the music did evolve dramatically over that, you know, 11-year time period. And we're gonna try and keep it somewhat chronological as we're talking about the different kind of music that was there. And in fact, I was just reading a little bit this morning again of, you know, when the conflict broke out, the war broke out, you know, with the Gulf of Tonkin incident and all these other things that were occurring there. I mean, many of the people that were in Vietnam were career officers. The draft really hadn't kicked in as far as sending people over there. And so we're looking at older soldiers and veterans, and they're still listening to, you know, 40s and 50s music, not necessarily the doo-wop music either.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right. And the other interesting thing, Dale, is that sometimes some of those songs, when you like Detroit City, you talk about 63.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there in 70 and 71. I never heard that song when I was growing up. I was, you know, I grew up in Philly and Pittsburgh. I was more of a urban kind of soul R&B guy.
Sure.
And, you know,
American
but
Bandstand
Detroit
guy.
City was played on every jukebox, every band, Filipino band, you know, Korean band, Taiwanese band, Vietnamese band played it and covered it. So it's like, for me, that song is 70 and 71, not just 63. So some of that, you're right, the soundtrack really changed radically. But, I mean, when you look at some of the stuff, Detroit City out in 63, We Got to Get Out of This Place was popular in 65. Those songs stayed in the Vietnam jukebox, if you will.
Well, yeah, you mentioned this, that all of the bands, the bands that we saw, I've got to be careful here with these bands, that we saw, you know, had these cover songs, and they played everything from the Beatles all the way up, you know, probably after I left, you know, into the Jimi Hendrix age.
And
it was, sometimes it was, you know, really good. Some of them were excellent. I mean, the Beatles were very popular at the beginning of the war also, you know, you know, then they kind of fell by the wayside because their stuff was, I don't know, it wasn't as powerful, I guess. You know, it didn't make you think as much until they later on in their career initially.
Mm-hmm.
But when you were playing, you know, the Bobby Bears and, you know, Detroit City and one of the other ones that I thought of that we put on the list, I'm not necessarily going to play all these, but, you know, the Green
sure.
Grass of Home by Porter Wagner.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm more familiar with the Tom Jones version of that song.
Yeah. And both were hits. And, you know, again, and you're hitting on something else here, too, Dale, that was very curious about this, you know, journey that we took with these conversations and then writing the book, is that, you know, a lot of people, I mean, Hollywood did a thing of sort of reinventing what we think about Vietnam. And everybody thinks it's sort of, it's for what it's worth by, you know, Buffalo Springfield, you know, it's Country Joe, feel like I'm fixing to die rag. It's the Doors, you know, with Apocalypse Now. And, but, you know, more often than not, the men and women we interviewed talked about Detroit City because of that line, I want to go home, of green, green grass at home, because it's about, you know, being away and missing your family and missing the girl that you were in love with. So some of these songs, you know, that maybe wouldn't have had a lot of staying power or didn't have a reason to because of the lyrics and the message. I mean, Swoop John B, you know, I mean, that's not about Vietnam, but, you know, I want to go home. This is the worst trip I've ever been on. Some people just sort of clung to songs like that. So it's really kind of interesting when you sort of look at, you know, the chronology and the changes, but also the stuff that stuck and stayed. Anything about home, about missing somebody. I mean, songs about, you know, like Gloria, because it's a guy's wife's name's Gloria, so that's going to be his favorite song.
There was a lot of karaoke going on, but it wasn't called karaoke at the time, which would be really embarrassing. I got an email this week from Al Wood, who was a dog handler for the Australians, and he's, you know, he sent me, and he had recorded, he said, a bunch of AFVN programs on his big giant, you know, recorder, and so he's going to send me all of those.
Oh my God!
Which I, you know, I definitely will forward them on to you because I think this is something that, you know, that is is fascinating to me. When we were talking about listening to the radio, and again, we are talking with Doug Bradley, one of the authors of We Got to Get Out of This Place, and we really do. I know, I realize this is a football day, and it's probably going to be tough, but I would like you guys, out, men and women out there, because, you know, nurses were very important over in Vietnam as well. Give us a call, 734-822-1600, and let's talk about the music that you heard over there. And I'm looking at the list that I sent you, and you said, you know, how difficult it was to come up with the soundtrack for Vietnam.
Yeah.
You know, there are hundreds and hundreds of songs that are so important. You know, since I talked to you earlier in the week, I think I've just been on this quest to hear as many as I possibly could, and my head's about to explode on all these things, because I was talking with Nina, who's our assistant, who gave you the call, and I said every song on this list or any other list that I was reading about in the book, there was a place and there was a time and there was an event and there was something else that was tied to that. And you know, the guy, as a helicopter pilot, we were fortunate enough that we could listen to Armed Forces Radio all the time. I mean, we had four radios going all the time, but the one that is lowest and kind of the theme of the whole day was we had AFVN on our automatic direction finder, I guess is what it was called at the time. And so as we were flying, a compass needle would point to where the signal was coming from. And in our case, it was coming from Saigon because I was also stationed in Long Binh, and we'll talk about that maybe a little bit. But so the needle always pointed to Saigon. And if we ever had got into any trouble, we'd say, you know, we're having a forced landing. We're on a 320 radio out of Saigon, you know, going down, you know, 75 miles out, something along those lines. So we always knew where we were. And this running musical theme was there just every day. And as soon
I think that's a really that's a great point. And I think, you know, we know the guys that were out in the field, you know, in combat on patrol. You know, they don't have the benefit of AFVN and what we're doing.
No.
But you
know,
even guys that we talked to and interviewed, you know, grunts that we talked to and guys that really did some of the heavy lifting and fighting, they had a song in their head sometimes. And sometimes I read one of the stories of a guy and they're saying, you know, I had this song in my head, you know, from Leslie Gore, you know, and I wanted it out of my head because it was distracting me from paying attention to what we were doing.
That's my party, right?
Yeah. I think the other thing, Dale, about what you were saying before is, you know, this isn't unique to this situation and this war and these soldiers. Everybody, you know, has musical associations. I'm sure kids are running around now and they'll say, Jack, I remember the first time I heard Taylor Swift or, you know, Kanye West. But, I mean, we had that because that's the way the brain's wired. You know, we've learned since, and some great studies have been done, that where memory is in your brain is right near where music is and where you hear. And so the association is good. But for us, what we think is makes this even special is that because of the trauma of a war and the kind of war that was and what people needed to do in order to sort of get through, that the music took on an even greater power and meaning. And sometimes songs that, you know, I'm sure we can talk about today or we'll come back on, you take a song like Chain of Fools by Aretha Franklin, mm-hmm. which sort of means one thing if you listen to it in the States, if you're white, another thing if you're listening to it in the States, if you're black, and then another if you're in Vietnam and you're black. And so it's just, you know, so this became, you know, for us, like, even more of a revelation, and I think speaks to the power of music and memory, and also of the ability of music to help us to get back home.
Right. I want to play a segment of Aretha Franklin's Chain of Fools, and that came out in 1967. So
yep.
We're all set. Let's hear a little bit of this. Okay, so we're going to let that kind of play under while we're talking. And as you said, that this song means things to different people.
Right. And you know, Aretha was, you know, I mean, she was the queen of soul. She was on the cover of Ebony magazine. She was the big R&B star of her generation, female. And, you know, so it's funny because sometimes when you talk to guys about an Aretha song, I mean, it's like with Hendrix and Aretha and CCR, I'd say, it's almost just who they are, not, you know, I mean, some people like different songs in the person's work, Respect, you know, mm-hmm. You know, Chain of Fools, et cetera. But, I mean, she was enormously popular and with the troops. And what's amazing is I heard that song. I was in college in 67 in the U.S., and I liked Aretha. And for me, that was just, you know, she had done Respect about, you know, give me some respect mm-hmm. when I come home. It was her again saying, you know, standing up to a guy, if you're going to leave me around and play me like a fool, you know, I'm going to break up with you. I mean, it was like almost like pre-feminist, you know, mm-hmm. a strong woman statement.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, some of the black men and women that we interviewed for the book, they talked about it. If they were back home and they heard it, you know, a whole different, you know, I mean, that meaning was there, sure. But Chain, and when you think of Chain and slavery, it was out during the civil rights movement. Aretha wasn't, you know, very political or out front with her politics. But like other black artists, like Sam Cooke and others, they would do a thing called masking, where she's saying one thing to a white audience, but the black audience knows there's a different meaning there. And they took that about breaking the chains of slavery and being a pro-civil rights song. Well, then you get to Vietnam with all that overlay and everything that was going on racially in the country that was, of course, compounded and even more challenging in Vietnam. And, you know, we talked to guys, black guys in there, in Vietnam, who heard that song, and it was about the chain of command. And, mm-hmm. you know, we all talk about the Tet Offensive being the turning point in the war, you know, about what it did with the media, even though, you know, the North Vietnamese, you know, I mean, it was a suicide right. mission. They didn't, you know, they were in tatters after that, but it was a psychological victory. And everybody talks about that. Black GIs talked to us about the death of Martin Luther King as being their turning point in the war. You know, if we couldn't keep their black leader alive back home, what in the heck were they doing over there? What were they fighting for? And one guy said, you know, when he heard about King's assassination, he wanted to go out and shoot the first white guy he saw. He was so angry. But then he went back to his hooch. He put on Aretha, came to Chain of Fools, and he sat there and he said, yep, he said, that's just it. You know, that wine, one day this chain's going to break. He said, that's it. I'm not doing this anymore. It's going to be different. I'm not going to follow the rules. It's not to condone that or say it's the way, but it's how somebody was feeling. And talk about the power of an interpretation of a song.
Oh, absolutely. I was going to kind of, when we think about just living through that decade and all of the changes that were happening, not only in Vietnam,
yeah.
but also at home.
Everywhere.
With the
yep.
assassinations and just you know, and the riots and the, yeah. And so on yeah. and so forth. Music also played a part in recruiting just a little bit. And I want to play just a little thing of the Ballad of the Green Beret, because this is...
Absolutely.
So let's hear this one for a second.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret.
I think that song was played, I can't imagine how many hundred times that I heard that, even when I was in flight school. I think it was the only song in the jukebox. And and then, you know, this came along, and then we also had the movie, The Green Berets.
Yep.
And if
yep.
you were in Long Bend, probably at the other end of the base from where I was, that was the movie probably four nights a week.
I saw the first and only time, I've seen it since we showed up to a class that we had in Madison, but first time I ever saw that movie was in Long Bend.
Yeah.
I was there.
Projected up against, you know, a white wall.
Yep.
And,
yep.
you know, and everybody, you know, all the guys are sitting there and they're going, don't go in there. Don't go down that. You know, it's like watching a, you know, a mystery novel. And, you know, and then the next night, it's like I felt like I was in MASH when that program came out. You know, this is the only movie we have, so this is the one we're going to watch. But the idea was that the Ballad of the Green Berets, even though when did that come out? 66.
66. 50 years ago this week, in fact.
Right. And yeah. I'll bet you that the Special Forces of the Army and the Green Berets still sing this song.
Oh, I would not be surprised. You know, it raises such interesting, and differing perspectives from people. But also, when you think of that song, you know, out then at that time when the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the whole British invasion was going on, Motown had the Supremes and the mm-hmm. Temptation, the Four Tops, you know, the Mamas and the Papas came on the scene. What was going on with music? That was the number one song of the entire year. The Ballad of the Green Berets was the top song of 1966. We have a number of different takes on that and different interpretations. You know, we had a guy from Wisconsin who was an ROTC captain who, you know, and was going over, and that was his song. And he thought it was like, because of that march, you know, you get the mm-hmm. feeling, and later you get the bugle call. He thought it was like On Wisconsin, you know, our fight song. We were going to march across South Vietnam and win the day and go to the end zone and score a touchdown and win for democracy. But, you know, his attitude about that song changed after he was there, because he had some problems with the way we were fighting the war at the time when he was there in 65.
I think probably as soon as he landed at Tonsonewton, they opened the door of the airplane. Yeah. You go, wait a minute, this wasn't exactly what I had in mind.
And the other funny thing was, including your fellow helicopter pilot, this was the most parodied song that I think that ever existed, because the Marines had their own song about it. Different branches of the Army had their own song about it. The Air Force had a song about it. The Navy, everybody made fun of the song. And there was one of my, and I remember even my buddy, Marty Hoyer, who's in the book, who was a helicopter pilot, High Priced Help. He was an officer, so he called this folk group, the High Priced Help, the lines they had. And it was Silver Wings Upon My Chest. I fly my chopper above the best. I can make more dough that way, but I can't wear no green beret. we had some we couldn't reprint, you know, the takeoffs on this song.
That's understandable. I mean, I can't remember the lyrics that we came up with it. I'm sure that they were just as bad at the time. But you know, and that's what we did. The songs were very powerful to us, and they were very important to us. And there were, as you've mentioned before, there were very, you know, important songs. And they were interpreted different ways I just mentioned this a couple of weeks ago in the program. They were interpreted differently by enlisted personnel to, you know, non-commissioned officers, to warrant officers, to officers, to generals. How did they interpret these things? And when, you know, we're going to come up on a break here in about a minute and a half.
Okay.
And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about Armed Forces Radio and how
sure.
Good Morning Vietnam was a great flick, but it wasn't exactly true.
Not close.
To everything that occurred when we were listening to the music over there. And in fact, every time I watch Wheel of Fortune, Pat Sajak was a DJ.
He was on one of the great shows over there. He was a DJ. Yeah.
Right. And it's always amazing the people that we're unaware of. Well, I'm going to play a little song as we go out and into the news break. And so I'm going to tell the people across the hall here, let's go with number 10, and that would be Fortunate Son, Creedence.
Great song.
Okay, so we're going to play this out, and then we'll come back after the news and talk some more.
Yeah, and if James out of control, maybe people will call in.
Maybe. Yay. 734-822-1600. You got a song, give us a call. Okay, we decided we weren't going to play the Woodstock version of that one for everybody. Everybody knows that's Country Joe and the Fish and the Fixin' the Die Rag. And that's kind of the switchover, I think. In the music of Vietnam, we're talking with Doug Bradley, one of the authors of We Gotta Get Out of This Place, the soundtrack of the Vietnam War. And we want to, if you're listening in and you got a song you'd like to talk about, give us a call, 734-822-1600. Doug, that actually is one of my favorite songs, as weird as it sounds.
Well, you're not alone in that, Dale, and it's not as weird. This is an amazing thing because when you think of the public persona and this image that people have of Joe and the Fish, and mm-hmm. especially Joe, and of course the lyrics of that song. When we met him, we went out to interview him and meet him, and we took a subway. He picked us up in his car to go to his house. When he introduced himself to us, he said, "I'm a veteran first and a hippie second." I mean,
I don't think many people knew that he was a veteran.
I don't think a lot of people knew that. He was in the Navy. He had to have his mom sign the papers when he joined when he was 18. He had just turned 18 because he wanted to see the world. This was an option. And as we were going to break, you know, two of the guys in Creedence were in the military. Jimi Hendrix was in the military. So it's like, you know, people forget that this was a generation where, you know, our fathers had won World War II and they all had served. So, you know, even sometimes the circumstances notwithstanding, we signed up and a lot of us went and participated. And so Joe, he was in pre-Vietnam, but he intended the song as gallows humor. I mean, it doesn't get darker than that, but part of the reason it appealed to us was it's sometimes when things are bad and there's a chance they'll get worse. We used to laugh in the military. I mean, we would joke about our situation, and that's what Joe intended with this song. Well, a lot of people never got the joke. They hated it. He still gets hate mail today for that song. But you and others, me, other guys that were there, Colonel Bo Gritz, you know, who was a rough and tumble, you know, kind of hawkish guy. He used to play that song for his soldiers to sort of fire them up. So, you know, it can take on some different meanings and have different associations for people depending on their circumstance.
Well, absolutely. I mean, in the gallows humor, sometimes it's the only way you can survive.
Right.
I mean, if you thought about what could happen to you all the time, it could, you know,
you'd go crazy.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It'd be a little
right.
depressing. And, you know, and the guys that were out in the field without the ability to listen to music, although they got themselves fairly creative, it sounds like, to be able to get the tunes out there. Well, let's talk a little bit about Armed Forces Radio Network that really was, you know, to boost up our morale. Can you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, and you know, I'll give him credit for it because, you know, there was a great book out, and, you know, this is later in the war. I realized that, you know, especially post-Vietnamization, when Nixon came in and we know we're leaving, we're turning the ground war over to the South Vietnamese, we're getting out of there, that, you know, in order to keep our morale up, the book that this woman wrote is called Armed with Abundance, and she talks about how they gave us, you know, a lot of stuff and access to a lot of stuff. When you look at, you know, maybe a hooch in 65, 66, as opposed to a hooch in 70 or 71 like I lived in, wasn't air conditioned, but the office we worked in with the brass was. But, you know, we had fans, we had hooch maids, you know, we had music, we had tape decks, we had tons of music, we had a little bar in the hooch. And so, I mean, we had some of the comforts. And I think one thing they were dead right about was that music was going to keep our spirits lifted. So they did what they could do and went as far as they could with the format on AFEN. Some of these guys started sounding like the DJs from back home. The playlist evolved. There were still some songs that were banned and censored, but they did what they could. And, you know, and then we had tape decks. We had cassette decks. We had live bands. We had USO shows. We had people touring, Nancy Sinatra, Johnny Cash. So music came to us in just like a tsunami, and it was there to keep our spirits lifted. And I frankly, it did. For me, music was huge. Obviously, the book is a testament to that. But even before I even thought about writing this book, music to me had enabled me to sort of connect with the guys I was with, the people I was away from, to survive the experience, and then when I got back home, to help me to get back home.
Well, there were a lot of obviously a lot of music over there. There were stations, you know, the Armed Forces radio stations in Saigon and up north. There was one up in all over the place. But there were also some pirate stations out there. and these guys were getting music faster than I think the DJs in Philadelphia were doing. It seemed like.
Oh. You are absolutely right. This is the funny thing. We have a guy, one of the guys that's in there that talks about a lot about Hendrix. And he knew a fellow that, and it was the way, you know, that things were sent over. But the short story was that he would get copies of popular music, especially from, you know, the LA and San Francisco area, before disc jockeys in the States would have them. Because this guy was into the music industry. And you're absolutely right. You know, I mean, some guys still talk about the music Hanoi Hannah played, you know, and that they listened to. And others talk about the pirates, you know, and or guys just going on a different band frequency on the radios that they had and playing music there. You know, we wanted to hear this stuff. It kept us going. You know, there was a lot about it that we liked. So, man, we were going to find any way we could. And I want to thank the Donut Dollies who DJed. And the Red Cross nurses at a lot of the, you know, a lot of the bases around Vietnam, music was coming and we were taking it.
Absolutely. In fact, I wanted I'm going to have them play another little thing here because it was mentioned in the release on this, and it's going to be cut number 16. And in it, you mentioned that a Marine was, you talked earlier about not being able to get a song out of your head.
Yeah,
and this is one of those songs that we couldn't get out of our heads once we heard it. So here we go. Of course, that was our generation's Sinatra.
Yes.
That was Nancy Sinatra, and that was from 1966.
Six.
Boy, that was a big
50
year.
50 years ago, yeah.
Another one of those big years. And as you mentioned in the book, this Marine who's out in the boonies couldn't get this out of his head.
I know. And sometimes we couldn't get the image of Nancy Sinatra out of our heads either.
We won't go there.
Absolutely. The guys talked about it. I mean, they were pushing this song so strong, and Nancy, to much to her credit, and I think it's why she is held in such high esteem to this day by Vietnam vets, because she went there, and she has spoken very eloquently herself about that was like a defining moment in her life and when things changed, because part of what stars like her did when they went there and performed was they also went to the hospitals to visit the guys.
Absolutely.
And that has forever changed Nancy Sinatra. But man, the song and the way she looked then with the go-go boots and the short
tall white boots.
But it's just amazing that for some of these guys, you know, we come back and guys talk about it. And of course, you know, you've got all that I've just mentioned for the appeal.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the other thing was that for some of these guys, when they think about it, they remember how essential boots were to their survival. You know, if you remember the footgear in Vietnam and how it evolved and adapted, that was, I think, one of the best designed combat boots ever. I mean, because of the way it would air out and you know, could handle water and could handle the heat and the jungle and but a lot of these guys would just tell us, you know, that song sticks in my head because my boots were essential to my survival. If my boots weren't working, I wasn't working. And so, you see, you've got Nancy, her appeal, the fact she went to Vietnam, it's a great song, but, you know, then you also have just the real direct indication that this is a part of your equipment that you need in order to be a soldier.
Well, it is fascinating with what these songs mean, as you mentioned, to different people. I want to play another one. This is by the Shirelles, and this is Soldier Boy. So let's hear this one. So, and that came out, you know, in 1962. This was even before everything started. And I can remember that song from high school. But I can also remember hearing it a lot in the officers' clubs with the bands.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and, you know, it's funny because, as you mentioned, it's a song that was not necessarily a Vietnam song. It's pre-Vietnam in many ways. But it's a song we all knew. It's been in movies. Oliver Stone has it, a great scene in that, and Born on the 4th of July. But again, it's back to the thing of what the Shirelles are talking about is what happened to a lot of young men growing up in those days, and that is they would go in the military, and they leave their sweethearts. Maybe they go to Germany like Elvis Presley, but they went in the service, and they served. And this is the whole thing about you'd miss them, you'd say goodbye. But, you know, a song like that sort of sticks around and hangs with you. So even though, again, you know, it's an older song. It was played there. People would sing, and then now we become soldiers, and that song is talking to us, you know, like we talked about, you know, Mr. Lonely by Bobby Vinton, same thing.
Yep.
But it didn't have anything to do with Vietnam. But, you know, but in that line, you know, I'm a soldier, I'm a lonely soldier, you know, I mean, those are the association connections people make, and it makes it strong. And, hey, if it got you through a day or a couple of days, thank goodness that you had that song.
That's right. In fact, I've got another one that follows up on that one, and you'll recognize this. This is The Letter by the Box Tops. And we got a lot of letters, and unfortunately, some people got bad letters. You know, they're basically
Dear
John letters. And I know myself, as a helicopter pilot, we had figured out how much fuel we would need to fly from Vietnam to California. We just couldn't quite figure what we were going to do with the overwater flight stuff. But we were working on it. We were working on it. You know, because, well, you knew, you know, and as you mentioned earlier, you know, Nixon came in with his plan to get out. I was, you know, Ho Chi Minh died in 1969, so we figured this thing's going to end soon.
Right.
Unfortunately, right. It didn't really too much.
Kept going, right. That's right. Fine, you know, I think you're absolutely right about, you know, that song, Lonely Days Are Gone, I'm Going Home. Of course, you know, and it's something that, you know, I want to, you know, mention here while we're there. Well, you know, like you said, the lyrics themselves say that, and the notion of letters. I mean, mail call, I was lucky enough in the rear, we had it twice a day. And, you know, we lived for it. I mean, you know, not for the Dear John letter if that came, but, you know, it was our, you know, if you got, we were getting something from your folks, you were getting a care package, you know, your girlfriend, your wife, your sweetheart, your brother, your sister, your friends from, you know, back home.
Right.
It was great. The letters kept us going, and they were, you know, we didn't have email. We didn't text.
No, it took,
yeah, we wrote letters.
And it took 10 days.
Yeah. But the other thing is that there were other things that, you know, like we talked about a little bit with the Green Berets and that march and the bugle call. And there were some songs, and this is where Hendrix really comes in, and he's later. But that sonically, you know, it's, some, you know, you can talk about All Along the Watchtower, Purple Haze, you know, and mm-hmm. we probably don't have time to get into those today. We'll do it another time.
No, we're going to be talking about
lyrics.
This again.
But, you know, the sound of Hendrix was very much like the, he has a song called Machine Gun. You know, and if you listen to his Star Spangled Banner at Woodstock, he does, you know, the call, mm-hmm. Whatever the naval call is,
yeah.
The distress signal. And I mean, so it's like, so we, you know, lyrically, a lot of this stuff we talked about with Bobby Bear, we just mentioned about with letters, you know, boots, meaning boots. But other times, just sonically, things made you and reminded you of Vietnam. Anything, and when, of course, we know. I mean, if you hear any of us hear a helicopter, we're there. I mean, because they were there, that was everything in Vietnam. Choppers all over the place.
That is true. We have to take another break, but we're going to be right back in just a moment. And on our way out on this break, let's see what we can play with this one. Let's do Brown Eyed Girl, number 21. Okay? So we're all set to go. I got a stretch while we're loading it up into the computer. But here we go. So we're going to take another break. Stay tuned. Come on back. We've got more music after these brief message.
Hey, where did we go? Days when the rains came. Down in the hollow. Playing a new game.
Veterans, storing your military honors in a shoebox, the closet, or in the basement? Why risk permanent damage to your priceless memorabilia? The solution is your own personal life chest. A life chest that provides a special place to keep those treasures, memories, safe and secure. An heirloom quality keepsake that'll be in your family for generations to follow. For your complimentary catalog and special Veterans Radio promotion, go to thelifechest.com. That's thelifechest.com.
I'm sitting here listening to Ina Gata DeVita with the same headphones I was wearing 50 years ago. They're as big as tin cans. And that, to me, was it wasn't really the changeover, but it was the changeover for me as far as music was concerned, because that came out in 1968, and that was by Iron Butterfly, folks. And then we're going to key up here in just a second, number 24, which will be Jimi Hendrix. All right, we're talking with Doug Bradley, whose book is We Got to Get Out of This Place, the Soundtrack of the Vietnam War. And we're only touching just the surface of some of these songs and what they mean to the Vietnam veteran and to everybody else. In fact, I was talking with Nina earlier, and she said that this music is outselling today's contemporary music. Still.
Yeah.
You know, because as I was downloading some of these things, they're all remastered from, 1960, whatever.
You know, the amazing thing is, Dale, that we teach this course about this at UW-Madison, and these kids are born, like, in 94, 95, 96. Did you want to play a song and then have me talk?
No. Go ahead.
Okay. And so, it could be the Peloponnesian Wars for all they know, but they know the music. Mm-hmm. And through the music, we tell them the veteran stories, and we let them hear about the war through the men and women who fought it. And it's so ironic. And we have two TAs, and they're both post 9/11 vets, and they listen to this music because their soundtrack was their own individual. They put on a headset, they had their iPod, they played their own song. They didn't share it. Mm-hmm. Ours was shared. I mean, even if you weren't in Vietnam, you listened to Inagada Davida and The Letter and Brown Eyed Girl, and all the songs we talked about. So it's like radio was our internet, and we all listened to the same music.
Right. And so what I'm having them do right now is we're going to start off with a little Purple Haze here, and we're going to bring it up. This drove my platoon leader crazy. He couldn't stand it. And every time, that's why we had to wear the headphones. When we'd start playing it and, everybody's dancing with each other, he would stick his head into our bar area and, tell us to turn it off. And so then we would go to something just as loud and obnoxious to him as we could think of, which is just what happens when you're 19, 20, 21 years old, right?
Exactly. We were kids. Well, what's amazing is that, again, here's another guy, people don't know it, Hendrix was a soldier. Mm-hmm. He was a bad soldier. The army got rid of him. But he was a screaming eagle. And, mm-hmm. So it gives a whole different, maybe, definition to, excuse me while I kiss the sky, if you listen to, if you know that Hendrix is in the military. But this is another one of those songs, because when at Purple Haze, I was in college when that song came out, there was a form of acid that was going around for people who were doing those sorts of things, psychedelics. It was called Purple Haze. Sure, it's a drug song. Well, you talk to guys in Vietnam, and, we had the M-18 smoke grenades, and what was one of the colors? It was purple. So for some guys, it's an LZ rescue. It's in the landing zone. So for them, Purple Haze is associated with, being safe, getting out, getting away from something. Here's a guy, who knows exactly what Hendrix was, but a song can have some different manifestations depending on where you were.
Well, you mentioned in the book there's a story about a tunnel rat, and that's what he would think about.
Oh, man.
I can't imagine being a tunnel rat myself, but he would throw smoke grenades in there, and that was the Purple Haze.
Yeah. And he would play the song because he didn't want anybody he would put his little cassette down there because he didn't want anybody, he wouldn't run into anybody. Here I come. Purple Haze.
Yeah, as we've said already, we're going to, probably try and do another one of these with different songs, but, and different units had favorite songs also.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Ours were the Ghost Riders of the Sky, and that came out in 1949 originally. And I thought of the Johnny Cash version, but this was a Vaughn Monroe, and I forgot about him.
And, the amazing thing about that, there's just another one that you're picking like that, and, that it's set to the same melody as When Johnny Comes Marching Home.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's another reason it sticks in our heads the way it does. And, Robbie Krieger of The Doors says it was the inspiration for Riders in the Storm. And that was a song that was out when I was there. And boy, if that didn't have like a Vietnam feel to it, everybody thinks of the Apocalypse Now and the end with The Doors. But for me, it's Riders on the Storm. I mean, and it's it's like Ghost Riders in the Sky.
Oh, that was a, that was an anthem. I mean, everybody would stand up for that one. And the Sky Pilots, another song by the Animals.
It's great song.
It's an amazing book, Doug, and I really want to thank you and Craig for putting this together, and I strongly encourage our listeners to go out and get it. I mean, there's some great reading, there's great stories, especially for you guys that were on the ground. You're going to find a lot of people like you out there. And there were some things going on in Vietnam that I didn't even know what was going on. I guess I wasn't paying attention, I guess, which is nothing unusual. But that's what I want to tell. Where can they get a hold of this? Everywhere, right?
Yeah, everywhere. I mean, that's hopefully your local bookstore tell them to get it. I think we heard the Barnes and Noble is going to have a display. Many of their stores around the country. It's, of course, available Amazon. You can get it that way.
Mm-hmm.
From our publisher, I could maybe help get people a discount. And we've also put together our own website for what we would hope today. And, there's a snowstorm, there's football. But if it's a WGGOOTP, it's basically the initials of it. WGGOOTP.com. And we tell men and women, go there and share your story. We got a thing on the site that says, what's your song? And we want to hear from people because we couldn't get to everybody. What's your song? Tell us.
Right. Oh, and you guys could be doing podcasts for years
I got a chance
stories.
To talk to you, and thanks so much for having me on.
I'm not quite done with you yet.
Good.
I got about a minute or so to go.
We're
going to go out.
We got to play another song.
Well, we're going to go out on San Francisco by Scott McKenzie.
Oh, wow.
Which was... I don't know. It's still a very emotional song. Anytime I hear this song, it almost brings tears to my eyes because, of course, San Francisco is where I came back into the country.
Yeah, same here.
And it's where I left the country.
Same here.
And
yep.
And of course, Tony Bennett with his version.
When I left my heart in San Francisco. Yep.
And so all of these songs have so much meaning, and I want to get together with you and Craig after the football seasons are all over, and we'll set up another program so that we can get you on and maybe get some of the people that you interviewed in your book. Because
that'd be fun.
Yeah,
that's a great idea. That would be very cool.
Yeah, let's
try that.
Yeah, because some of your what you call solo the articles that they wrote about their memories of this music and so forth is really, really important. And as we always say here on Veterans Radio, is that we want to make sure that we get the people that were actually there to tell their stories. Because sometimes authors kind of get confused and, don't necessarily know what it was. So anyway.
Yep, I know what you're saying.
So Doug, thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio.
My pleasure, Dale. Welcome home, everybody.
And welcome home to you, too. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is the end of Veterans Radio for today. Stay tuned for just a second, though. We're going to play the entire length of San Francisco by Scott McKenzie. Until next week, not yet. I'm hearing it.